I am Nkosina Tindlovu, and this is Tech Central Show, the technology business podcast, also known as TCS. TCS is brought to you in collaboration with MTN Business. Visit MTN Business at mtnbusiness.co.za to find out more about their products and services, and we thank them for partnering with the show. My guest today is an entrepreneur in the e-commerce space. Founder of Zulzy, which started out as a grocery aggregator and now operates from its own dark stores or warehouses, as well as powers the Checkers 6060 app. Welcome to the studio, Donald Voloi of Zulzy.
Thank you, Rati. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah. Very excited and looking forward to have a conversation with you.
Great, great. It's great to have you here, Donald. So, Donald, you started out as a corporate warrior. Working at some of the finest institutions in the country, actually. So where did the impetus to now leave what some might consider a cushy corporate job to fight it out as an entrepreneur come from?
Look, I think I'll say from day one, I knew that I'm going to have my own business, right, before I even entered the corporate space. So I think for me, like when I was working for, I think in the later days, I worked for companies like One Connect, worked for companies like F&B. I knew that, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, be one of those guys who are going to climb the corporate ladder.
Yes.
But one of those guys who are definitely going to go out and start their own things. I was driven more by the ambition to change the world.
Yes.
To change and give more opportunities to other people as well. So I thought, you know what, just by starting on corporate, I could make a much bigger impact, you know, than in a corporate space. And then I think in 2012, that's when I decided to call it quits. My last job, I was working for F&B. I then decided to start Zulzy as an e-commerce platform back then, you know.
Yes. Yeah. But why e-commerce in particular?
Look, I was always fascinated by technology to start with. So everything I was doing was always revolve around technology. Yes. So I started by selling books online.
Yes.
And at the time, I think I was really, really motivated by guys like Galari,
yes,
Take a Lot. I could see exactly how, you know, they were changing things, you know, for the better.
Yes.
And I really wanted to be part of that. So I then decided to start my own business, which was then at that stage was focusing more on selling books online.
Okay. But what's in the name? How did you come up with Zulzy?
Yeah. So the Zulzy name, funny enough, I was actually, I remember I was sitting in the office and I can see that, you know what, this thing that I'm starting here is going to become big, right? And I need to come up with a name that will sort of be there forever, you know. Yes. And then as I was browsing through Facebook, I saw this lady's name. Her name was Zuzile.
Yes.
And I loved that name, Zuzile, which means to achieve something.
Yes.
And then when I saw that name, I was like, oh, here's the name for Zulzy, you know.
Yeah.
I took it and then I rearranged it and it became Zulzy.
So Zulzy is an achievement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I love the fact that it sounds like it's Italian, you know, like it sounds Italian. So I was thinking, you know what, people might not think it's like South African.
Yes. Give it an international flavor.
Yeah, give it an international flavor.
Yes.
Others call it Zulzy, others call it Zulzy.
Yes.
You know, but it's Zulzy.
Right? Oh, no, man. Yeah. It's a great name.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you started way back in 2013.
Yeah.
But I'd have to say that perhaps one of your most important milestones was developing that relationship with Checkers. Was this prior to COVID or?
Yeah, I think maybe I think 2013, right? A little bit of history for Zulzy. I think when we started in 2013, we were just selling books online to students. And then in 2016... and then the idea of building an app instead of just an e-commerce website, that's where it started, right? So in 2016, we built a platform that used to aggregate different retailers, you know, Pick and Pay, Woolworth, Discount Clicks. And then we introduced one-hour delivery in the country at the time, right? So there was actually no 1 hour. In fact, it was unheard of to say you can get your groceries delivered in 1 hour. And then we started then, and at that time, in fact, there was no partnerships as well. We didn't have any partnership with any of the retailers.
Yes.
We just went in there, scraped all the data, put into our platform, and then people started ordering, you know. And then we saw our platform started growing. People started to notice, different retailers saw what we're doing.
Yes.
In fact, at that time, what was interesting was I actually never thought there could be another market for any other retailer except Woolworth, right? Because as we had these different retailers, in terms of market share, Woolworth had 90% market share on our platform.
Mm.
So to me, in fact, it sounded like it was going to be hard for any other retailer. We had other independent retailers, like even like Spa.
Yes.
But they didn't come close to what we're selling via Woolworth, right? So then it almost sounded like it was actually like going to be this platform for like super rich people.
Yes.
Right? And I mean, like at that time, I still remember like our top 100 customers, they will spend like between 50 to 220,000 rand every month on groceries. And majority of that was coming from Woolworth, you know. And for me, it's something that I never imagined, you know. So in fact, like when we launched, we actually used to aggregate restaurants, retailers. But then after 6 months of launching, I realized that the food space was getting crowded. When the likes of Uber Eats, Mr. D as well were really coming into that space. And from our side, we didn't have the capital. We were actually just still funding these things from our own pockets. You know? So to me, you know, like I didn't want to be in a space where, because I already seen what Kalahari and Takealot could do in the e-commerce space. And it was very, very difficult for one to penetrate without capital. So I then wanted to be in a space where it's like there isn't like any big player, but then it can give you enough time to own that space. You know? And then to me, like it looked like for food, it was like a little bit too late for us, right? Because obviously these big players were entering the space. I still remember after 6 months, we're doing about a million rand GMV. And then from that million rand, I think 900,000 rand was coming from fast food, you know, your KFC, Chicken Licken. But then I decided, you know what, let's actually leave that and focus on 100,000 rand, which was groceries. Because what I saw there at the time, the guys were actually offering online or home deliveries. It was pick and pay, Woolworth, and they will actually deliver groceries after 2 to 3 days. The experience was not great. You would sometimes you order fat-free milk, you get full cream milk. Or if you are lucky, you know? Sometimes you get nothing. You know, there's no communication. So to me, like it sounded like it's a space to be in it. You know, and also like obviously, over time, I started to also realize that the technology space, you really need to connect with the rest of the world. So what was clear as well, what was happening in the US, you could see even the likes of Amazon, they were really pushing hard to enter the grocery space. You know? So I remember even back then, guys, players like Amazon bought retailer Whole Foods in pushing to enter the grocery space. So it was really clear to me, like, the grocery space is quite critical, it's quite crucial. And it's got a lot of data that is not being used for, like, whether if it's advertising, mining that data to me, like, sounded like it's actually going to be such
a valuable thing
to do, right? In fact, when I compare it to e-commerce, if you think about it, if someone buys a TV, they might not come back and buy another TV again next month, right? But for groceries, like, it happens over and over again, you know? So that means that data is quite valuable, you know, for brands. So to me, when I looked at that, it sounded like this is a very interesting space. And the only way, you know, for you to play in it, you have to get involved very early. And that's why I made a call to say, you know what, let's rather focus on groceries. When it was not fashionable to do that. And it was kind of like a scary decision at the time. You know, imagine like say, you know what, 900,000, I'm not going to focus on it, to focus on 100,000. But it actually allowed us to focus more, right? We got better. We're solving problems every day. You know, when you go, I was the guy who go deliver to customers, you're speaking to customers every day. You know, we started with one customer, right? That every day I'll go to their house, they'll tell me their complaints, the things that are not great. And then we take that and then we improve the platform. So
and you're the same guy coding the solutions into the platform at night.
So actually, like what I also brought in at the time is Michael as well. So Michael joined, and then later on, another cousin of mine called Dash. Joined the team. And then, so like it's a team of three people on the tech side. These guys doing everything from product development, testing, everything.
To delivery.
Even delivery. You know, like there was no, it wasn't like there's an IT department. You know, it's like you just have to do what needs to be done, right? If it means today we need people to go and lift the stuff, you have to do it. At the same time, you have to raise money to keep this thing going, right? You know, as it's growing, you find that on a day-to-day sometimes, because remember, like also we had shoppers who will go pick the groceries in the store. Sometimes as you are growing, you find that there is not enough cash. And people are waiting in the store, and then you have to get cash to load into their cards. You know, Sometimes most of those guys, some of them, they steal money from those cars. They go buy jeans. So it was quite cumbersome when we started. Yes. You know, there was quite a lot of things that one had to do to get this platform going, right? But but again, I think for me, it's like when you're driven by passion, you know, and passion, people always think like passion is like, it's great. Passion means you're going to suffer, right? You suffer for these things. And that's what we went through. Like, we're suffering a lot at that time, but we really believed in what we're building. And then fast forward, obviously, you know, like then the likes of Checkers before COVID then approached us to say, you know what, like, we want to see how we can work with you guys, you know. And that's how that partnership then came about, right?
So you would spend time, so you were fortunate enough to spend time. I guess the market was as you said, it was in the higher end. And you spent time building IP in the space, you know, really building the knowledge of how to do this thing. Because I think it was really COVID that came along and then shifted the market towards, hey, maybe this is something that I can do as an average person on a daily.
Look, I mean, it was already shifting as well, right? I think, you know, obviously a lot of people think when they see, people assume that a lot of players during COVID, they built platforms, right? But there was already like, people were already planning. They could see that this space is going to be like a big space.
It's going
to
grow,
So even the retailers, they were starting to notice that. Even us, in terms of our numbers, I was seeing the growth, right? I mean, before COVID, for instance, on our own platform as Uzi, as an independent platform, I think we're doing almost 7 million rand GMV, right? Just before COVID, you know? So that was quite a big number for a startup that had not raised a significant amount of money, you know? So to me, it was very clear, right, that there was actually something, you know. Same thing with the retailers. Obviously, you know, there are guys who are very good in terms of identifying and putting together the right teams as well. Checkers as well definitely were the leaders in that space in terms of, like, identifying how do we get, how do we partner also with the right people, you know. And, I mean, at that time, in fact, the right people, it was not people who were looking very rosy, you know. It's like us, we were, like, in Braamfontein. I still remember when they had to come to see us. You know, we had to redo the office overnight, paint it overnight. But those are the kind of things that were happening at that time, you know, and this was way before COVID. And none of us anticipated that there's going to be COVID, you know. So which shows you that, like, there had to be a plan, you know, you have to prepare. So obviously when things are big, people start to assume that it just happened overnight. No, I think the truth is, and I have to give credit also to the Checkers team that actually even from their side, they started to realize that this here is an opportunity.
It's coming.
This is the space that's going to come, right? And that's what set up apart, like, from every other retailers. Other people were just sleeping.
They weren't looking at
even people were in our platform. You know, there were other retailers in our platform, but they couldn't see that. They couldn't, every time you speak to them and show them their numbers, that, hey, look at your growth.
This is you.
Every month you're growing 100% month on month. You know, because also, like, I think some of the mistakes that people were making back then when you're speaking to them, as well as the big retailers, they were so fixated on our numbers, right? Like, asking a startup that is doing so much, like, where, you know, like, for instance, in our case, like, we didn't have cash. People are buying. You must raise money. You do all of these things. So when you look at those numbers, in fact, they represented something quite big. But a lot of people were actually thinking, like, no, we're going to partner with these people and they start doing 1 billion rand. And forget that, like, for us, in fact, the key thing that we had there was the ability to build technology very quickly that can scale, that can work. You know, and remember, if you are a big retailer, you have the numbers. So you should not be worried about bringing the numbers
on the technology.
If you bring that, those and two, then it flies. Then there's magic.
You know? But you've touched on that now. That synergy between you as a startup, you're fast, you're nimble, and then that corporate element coming in via Checkers. How does the relationship, or how did it work?
Yeah, look, I mean, like, you know, like, it was a very small team on the Zuzi side. I think, in fact, when we got the contract, we had to quickly hire people. You know, I still remember, in fact, when they came to our office to bring a lot of friends as well to look like it was a big team, but we didn't have a team, you know. So we had to, after a while, it was more like, okay, cool,
now
we need to build, we need to, we need to quickly build a team. But also, again, like, we're really looking for young people, more energy. We're very passionate, you know. So I still remember I will call the guys, students from Stellenbosch, tell them that we are this startup. doing amazing things in the grocery space. You know, even our address was in Sandton, even though we're still in Bram, you know. But, you know, hoping that by the time they join us, we'll move to Sandton.
We'll be in Sandton,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so like we attracted all these young, talented people who, most of them today, they still work for us, you know. So, so that became, that was the beginning of our journey. Yeah, and then obviously then, you know, we continued to build the initial version of the 6060 platform. And that was the beginning of a great relationship with Checkers. And then over time, then obviously they also invested in Zuzi.
Yes.
So yeah, so that's how our journey started with them.
Okay, and then today, yes, obviously you've got that tech element that where you're supporting Checkers 6060. How is Zuzi operating as a standalone today?
Yeah, so one of the problems that I saw back then, in fact, when I was picking from the different retailers, because obviously we didn't have any partnership with the retailers, which means we're not able to earn any commission from them, right?
Yes.
And the plan was always, our model, I always wanted to get like some fee, some commission from them, and then add a little bit of a service fee. But when that was not coming, then it meant we relied on the service fees only.
Yes.
Right? So which means we're very expensive to
for the
end consumer.
Yes.
Yeah. So to me, in fact, it explained why we sort of like had a lot of like high, you know, high end customers, you know, as opposed to like your middle to lower LSM. And I think if you think about South Africa, right, in order for you to make it, especially for online, we're really like, if you think about our population, it's a very small number, right? The numbers that we have here, it's quite small. So you really need to build a platform that is going to be there for the masses.
Yes.
So to me, I didn't like the fact that our then platform, it was very clear that at most, if we had executed everything, you'd do everything well, it could have been maybe a 1 billion rand GMV business a year, right?
Yes.
But on the other side, then I realized that maybe if we then establish our own dark stores, which we call warehouses, then we stand a better chance, right, of becoming a big player in the space.
Yes.
So that's when I started actually like coming up with this idea of actually establishing like warehouses that we call dark stores.
This means, by the way, that you have your own inventory.
Yeah, so that means we now deal with the FMCGs directly.
Yes.
Yeah, so then we started establishing like mini warehouses. So today we've got 7 dark stores. So within those dark stores, what you can do, you can get your pharmaceutical products, you know, so different schedules.
Yes.
So all those warehouses will also have a pharmacy in them, right? So meaning that like if you're sick, you want to upload a prescription, you can go on the Zuzi platform, upload a script. So we built all of that and then also integrate with different medical aids, which means you can actually go on the platform, submit a claim, and you do that by yourself, right? You can also buy like normal products like Panado.
Yes.
You can actually check out by yourself.
Yes.
Using medical aid as a method of payment, you know. So those are some of the things that we've been able to do, and we've been scaling the platform, and we can see that we're growing month on month. You know, like some of the mature dark stores, you can see them like every day doing like over 1,000 orders, you know. One warehouse, main warehouse, doing over 1,000 orders, which is great. It shows you that actually, you know, there's still more we can do.
There's room there. Yes.
Yeah, there's still room there. You know. So yeah, so like that has been the journey. So so today we have 7 dark stores. We hire almost over 300 independent drivers, delivering groceries. You know, from early in the morning until 11 p.m.
Yes.
Monday to Sunday.
There's no rest.
Yeah, there's no rest. You know.
Yeah.
If you are sick, you know, if everyone else is closed, we are the only guys who are open, you know.
Yes.
So you'll come to us and then we'll make you feel better.
Okay.
If you don't get better with the pharmacy, we'll give you alcohol. We'll give you a little bit of tequila.
One of the interesting things, I mean, you talk about speaking, for example, you're selling alcohol, you're selling drugs that are scheduled, actually, and regulated by law.
Yeah.
So you are building this tech, but then there's regulation that you have to deal with in the interim. How difficult has that journey been for you as you've grown?
No, it has not been easy, right? I think the most important thing is obviously what you must do as well is you must, as you are scaling the business, obviously you have to make sure also with the regulators they're happy with you. And then just making sure that obviously you are, you are moving with them, right? Yes. In terms of like, you know, like if you think about like the pharmaceutical space, yes. the drugs and what can you do online, yes. there's so many rules that you have to build even into the system itself, yes. right? So it's quite a very complex space. And that's why if you think about healthcare, there's not been enough transformation in that space because of that, right? But I think... right now, in fact, even in during COVID, there was a lot of things that were changed, you know, in terms of the regulation that really allowed the ease of doing things. So, for instance, even things like, you know, consultations online, virtual consultations, yes. you know, there's a lot of things that are now possible that were not possible. But what is still left now is, you know, when I look at the healthcare, it's so fragmented today, right? You have someone who's still writing a script manually, you know, like that whole process is just too manual. You go to a doctor, yes. you are sick, you must pick up a phone, you call a doctor,
yes.
you get there, they write you a script,
yes.
manual, everything is manual.
Everything is
manual, right?
Yes.
You must then go and queue in the pharmacy, you know, as if you're not sick, right?
Yeah.
You get there, if you're lucky, there's still a co-payment, you must go join another queue.
Yes.
You know? So there's just a lot of things that are not great. Yes. In the healthcare space, but those things, they represent opportunities.
Yes,
right? They represent opportunities, I think, and we want to solve those problems. We want to really build a platform that is fully integrated, you know. If we think about like even things like drug abuse, you know, like it's very hard, you know, when you've got a script that people can take around and give it to this person and then that you've got no way of knowing if this script was used or not. Right. So that becomes very hard, you know. So like for me, I believe in a world where like all of these things should be living in one place. If I issue with a script, I should be able to see what have you taken in this script,
yes.
you know, what is it that was
dispensed to you,
who dispensed it, what happened, you know. Funny enough, maybe even people who are employing these people might need to see as well. People go there and they say they are sick, but they don't go and take the medication. funny enough, with this virtual consultation, there's a lot of people who actually get the script.
Yes.
In fact, almost 80% of them,
yes.
they never go and get medication. They just wanted a sick note.
They just wanted the sick note.
Yeah, but it costs these companies money.
Exactly.
Right. So there's just a lot of things that are so fragmented. And yes. I think... what we are trying to do now is to actually bring those things together and say, like, you know,
digitize
the whole journey,
yes.
you know, because also another thing is like, if you think about even the dispensing as well of this medication, when you go to me, like when I think about a pharmacist, right, a pharmacist is like, obviously, you know, like went to school, highly educated, but that part of where, how they pick things, how they must take things on a script, capture it on a computer.
Yes.
It takes them 30 minutes to do that, right, on average, to help. And they are very expensive. So imagine like having someone like that who you're paying on average 50,000 rand,
yes.
spending like almost 20, 30 minutes helping one person.
Yes.
That's not right.
It's like owning an expensive car and most of the time it's parked.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? yeah.
So you have to build tools to help them so that they can actually do these things faster. And that's what we're trying to do now as Uzi.
Okay. Okay, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. So looking at the problems you were solving for in the beginning versus what you're solving for now, would you say that you've changed somewhat, or is it still the same journey?
Look, I think there's a lot of things that are changing now, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you look at the tech space, there's a lot of things changing, even globally, right? So you can't say, you know what, you have arrived, you know? I'm seeing a lot of even like scary stuff happening today, right? Like in terms of like even how people want to buy things, how people want to consume content, you know? A lot of people sit and think, if you think about like, in fact, even just the e-commerce platform, like, you know, like even the big ones, your Amazon, how they sell things online, right? It hasn't changed for years. But people, I can tell you now, they are ready to consume content very different, you know? So for instance, I see a lot of, like a rise in terms of how people want to use video, for instance, to buy things, right? Instead of like pictures and all those things.
Yes.
Remember also those things, the reason why we used to have pictures and stuff was because people didn't have better phones, right?
Yes.
They didn't have access to the internet.
Yes.
When they do have access to the internet,
yeah.
surely how they consume these things has to change
as well. It has to change.
Right? Yeah. So I can't like just buy a TV and I just see a picture if I'm going to be spending 30,000, and maybe show me a video so I can see more about this thing, you know.
Yes.
So there's a lot of that shift that we're already seeing, you
okay.
know. And obviously also people are not, people are not patient enough, you know, when there's in an online space, because there's just so many things, you know. You wake up, when you open your phone, you know, like you can either go to TikTok, you go to YouTube, there's so many options, right? So making sure that, like, when the customer comes to you, you present them with the relevant things is quite critical. Because if you don't do that, right, like what you're saying with your TVs, SABC, right? When everybody's fighting to say, can I show you these videos within a space of time? When I go on TV, it's like, if I left it on SABC 1, it's still stuck there.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So when you open it and there's nothing that's, like, interesting, you just shut it
down. You shut it down,
You shut it down. Mm. And I mean, like, those trends, you can see them as well in terms of, like, a lot of people were thinking, like, oh, people that are actually chowing the market share of these guys is maybe your Showmax, your Netflix, but you can also see they're also struggling a bit, right? Because, you know, like, underneath there's these social media platforms, right?
Yes.
Content-driven that shows you the right things. The rise of AI as well is something that we can't take for granted. And a lot of people, in fact, when they think of AI, they've been thinking of robots.
Yes.
So it's not just robots, right? So AI is, if you think about even TikTok, how they show you that content, they use a lot of AI, right?
Yes.
Things like collaborative filtering, looking at similar users to say,
yes,
these users, they like 1, 2, 3, 4. If you like AB, and another user will like AB, but you haven't seen C, so it's easy for you to recommend this to say,
so other users. A lot of data analysis, actually, and profiling.
Yeah, that has to happen in real time, you know. And then as you're training this model, you also have to validate that whatever I've showed you, is it right? Did you like it?
Yes.
You know, and also, like, for you telling me if you like a certain content, it's not just you going there and say, I liked it or I didn't like it. Sometimes you don't have to tell me. Just by you skipping a video or not finishing it, it could tell me something, you know. So because people are not patient. You know, unlike back in the days where you will send a big form, you know, to say, did you like this video? Did you find it offensive? You know, people could do it then because there was no time. They had an ample of times, you know. Remember how, you know, like, it's funny, like, even back then, right, you will download a movie, right, and you will actually go and watch it.
Yes.
But today, for instance, if you go on YouTube and you save a video, there's a high chance that you might not watch
it. Never going to go back,
Because of, like, there's just so many things, you know. And those are the things that when you're in this space, you have to keep track of that. Because if you don't keep track of, it's a very dynamic space, right? It's not just, because sometimes people, you find that they forget that the reason why we have certain things like that was because there was slower internet.
Yes.
There were no devices. And then when those things are developing, if you're still stuck on you providing content for the old people, then you'll be destroyed. And today, when you look at, like, why, in fact, a lot of these Chinese companies, your PDD, really, like, shaking up things, you know, like, for instance, people are still looking at, like, all your big Amazon, your Alibaba, but things have changed quite a lot.
Yes.
So in China, you've got guys like Meituan, you've got guys like PDD.
Yes.
PDD are the same guys who own companies like Temu. So those guys have really been, like, looking a lot of, like, you know, like, changing how actually customers should shop online, right?
Yes.
And most of it also driven by, how can I offer you video content? How can I do things like, even gamifying how you shop.
Yes.
You know? So when you are shopping, it's not just you shopping, you know. So in fact,
making it fun for the user. Yeah?
Yes. So in fact, like, if I think about, like, even how the traditional malls, right, have been struggling, because remember, like, there was a time where you would actually go to the mall, right, just to walk around the mall and browse, because you know what, there was just nothing else to do, right?
Yes.
But today, you, in fact, malls have to bring more entertainment.
Yes.
Shoppers don't really want to go to the mall
just for fun.
Browse. Yes. They want to go there for fun. They want to go there for the best restaurant and best experiences. The same thing with online as well.
Yes. Right?
Where, obviously, when it started, it was just like a mall where you could actually just win by offering people things.
Yes.
You know?
Just now, have something. Yeah.
Yeah, have something. But now what we're seeing is, like, the players that are now starting to dominate.
Yes.
Are players who are bringing all those things, like, you know, how can I bring video? How can I bring things like, how can I give me fire experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned other players in the space, and I guess you're touching on competition.
Yeah.
And we've seen the e-commerce space now, you know, with the arrival of Shein and Temu, yeah, as well as Amazon.com.
Yeah.
What do you think, how do you think these players are changing the South African landscape?
Yeah, look, I think for me, what is so interesting with those players coming here, it validates that South Africa is a very good market for e-commerce, right? And I mean, like, you know, if you compare even like, you know, like whether if you take someone like Takealot, you compare it to Jumia, that operates in many countries, you will see how strong our market is.
Yes.
You know, with Takealot just operating in South Africa, you'll see that they actually do better than Jumia, but operating in 5 different markets.
Yes,
you know, it just shows you that South African consumers actually have been ready for the online penetration.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of things, obviously, that we can do to make it easy for, because ultimately what we need as well, right, is to actually, you know, like ensure that like people in remote areas as well can get easy access,
yes,
you know. So I still believe that one day, for instance, things like post office can be revived,
yes,
to help with logistics, you know. Because, I mean, if you look at Global as well, right, like if you look at Amazon in the US, they don't, yes, deliver everything by themselves, right?
Uh-huh.
So making use of those facilities can actually help to even reduce the cost, right?
Mm.
Because, you know, like when you start going to the remote areas,
yes,
the biggest question is like, how can I deliver things in those areas at a very, at a reasonable price, right?
Yes.
Yes, we have these independent couriers, all of these smaller players trying to fill the gap, but ultimately you also need the state to come to the party to help, you know, so that we can actually have better penetration, not just for the suburbs, for,
yes,
all these
or
places,
for affluent,
right,
people.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah. Because like remember what I said to you, like, I don't think e-commerce, it will be a mistake for us as South Africans if we don't move with everyone, right,
yes,
in this rival. And by the way, those players are already doing that. You know, if you look at your team, Shein, they're actually already going to the remote areas, delivering,
yes,
there.
Yes.
But if we can do more in terms of, like, you know, trying to build a better infrastructure,
mm-hmm,
that can help, you know, to reduce the cost. So I think in terms of, like, obviously the players coming into the space here, it's also like a very challenging for the local players. And I think also that's where the regulators can help as well in terms of trying to level the playing field, you know. It doesn't mean like when an international player comes here, yeah, all of a sudden we should all be excited and be rejoicing on that, right? Because,
yes,
I think you must be proud of your local brands, right? Mm. And you have to promote them. In fact, I hope that one day, once we have done enough here, a lot of these local brands also need to start going out.
Yes.
Right? And that's what, when you look at these Chinese, a lot of these Chinese brands, they've,
yes,
been supported by the government to come to these different countries, say, actually,
yes,
go to the US, go to the, yeah, South,
yeah,
Africa, right? They,
yeah,
support them. So I think for me, ultimately, we need to get to a point where we can get a lot of the South African brands. A lot of things that we do here, by the way, right, they are well standards, you know.
Yes.
So if you, and I think sometimes we might take it for granted. You might think, mm-hmm, this is standard everywhere. Right?
Yes.
So if you think about like what Zuzi is doing, what Checkers is doing,
yes,
what Takealot is doing, it's actually world class.
Yes.
You know. So we need to be very proud of that,
mm-hmm,
and ask ourselves, how can we better support these platforms? You know,
yes,
because those platforms as well, they pay tax here locally, right?
Mm.
They employ local people.
Yes.
There's a lot more happening here, you know. So not to say that obviously in the tech space, the world is, it's got no boundaries, right? And no one's going to come here.
Yes.
But what we need to see or identify is we have to take pride with our local players. Remember, like, also, like, when you have got, like, a lot of the transactions happening, these international players,
yes,
when there's a problem, sometimes they just come and say, what's going on here with these people?
Yeah.
You know, and that's why when you look at, like, why even the US, they were becoming uncomfortable with players like TikTok, you know,
yes,
was because they want to protect their own data, you know, to say, no, actually, now we have a problem. Someone,
yes,
in China is actually looking at what we're doing things here, right?
Yes, yes.
So the same thing that we also have to do, obviously, in terms of protecting the local players, to say, how can we better protect them? How can we,
yes,
also, like, make sure that in terms of legislation, everything set them, like, it doesn't, like, bring them down, right?
Mm-hmm.
You sort of, like, do things that can actually help to propel and create more jobs, you,
yes,
know? So, and I mean, like, if you look at the online space as well, it's going to create more jobs. It gives more opportunities even to smaller businesses. I mean, what we do as those as well, we also give access to smaller players to say, you know what, if you can't qualify to sell in a big retail because their requirements are quite big, you can come to us, you know, you can come to us with 12 products.
Yes.
Products.
And we'll list you.
Yeah, we'll list you there,
yes,
like, instantly, you,
yeah,
know? So those are some of the things that I think It's needed, and the government needs to see that as an opportunity to say, you know what, e-commerce can actually help. Because you know what, if there's one thing that I like about e-commerce, it's the speed in which things happen. You know, it's so easy for you to say, you know what, if you were to support e-commerce, you can easily create 10,000 jobs easy within like a month.
Yes.
And you can double it over and over again. You know, so if I was government, I would say, you know what, you have to really pay attention to that to say, what are we doing in the e-commerce space, right?
And I guess from one side, I guess maybe funding is one form of obvious support, but also creating kind of an enabling regulatory environment where young players can grow is also important.
Definitely. I think, like funny enough, like a lot of like when you look at regulation for what exists today, right? There's a lot of gray area for e-commerce where you can see that actually there's just no regulation at all. You know. When you make an application, right, like there's nowhere where you feel that I'm actually feeling I'm an online player.
Yes.
So, for instance, there's nowhere where you can say I'm an online pharmacy player.
Yes. Right? They expect you to have an address.
Yes, you must have the address, must have the physical, everything, right? So those are some of the things that needs to be changed, definitely, you know. And that's why, for me, like, you know, when people are talking about AI and all these things, I'm like, no, there's still some basics that we need to get right.
Yes.
And we need to get them right quickly, because if we don't, we run a very big risk of people just coming to take over and do everything.
Yes.
And then we lose out and we can't participate as South Africans, you know. So I think definitely the government will have to play a big role in terms of helping out, right, in terms of making sure that the online players are not, you don't put them in a disadvantaged place, you know.
So
and also, like, you know, if you think about e-commerce right now, there's a lot of investment that goes towards it, right? A lot of people think e-commerce, you just come in there, you make money, you are profitable, everything is all good. You need scale. And the reason why I'm speaking about like the need for even your post office to be revived is because scale is very important.
Yes.
Right. So you can deliver things. If you don't have scale, you can deliver things and lose money. Right. And that's why, like, if government thinks, oh, now let's create a leveling field where we can have everybody to take on the big players, right?
Yes.
You just lack that understanding of, like, they're going to be losing money, right? Because you need scale, right?
Yes.
And just to explain it in a simple way is, because I also see a lot of people, even whether if it's a restaurant, saying, you know what, we want to do our own deliveries.
Yes.
And they never work. You know why they never work? Because you don't have scale.
You don't have the scale.
Yeah, when you don't have scale. In simple terms, think about it this way. When you hire a driver for a restaurant, you say they're going to deliver my orders, right? And you pay them 12,000 rand, and then you pay a bike 5,000 rand, whatever, for fuel and for maintenance, which is 17,000.
Yeah.
But you find that driver actually is getting one order, right, every day. And then that doesn't make sense, right? And sometimes, for you to scale, it means you must be giving a very good service.
Yes.
Right. Meaning that people are getting stuff on time.
Yes.
Right. So means, actually, what it means, you need to inject capital from day one, and not make money through it. You know, and that's why, in fact, it's better than to have these aggregators help you to provide that service. You know, so those are some of the things that you have to be very careful, because a lot of people as well, the regulators, when they look at the space, they're like, no. We have a problem here.
We have big players.
Yeah, we've got big players. You know, but
the space exists because the big players are there. Actually.
Yeah, they're needed, right? Yes. So you need to support them, right?
Okay.
So that's the part where I think, like, really understanding the space in terms of what are the enablers in the space, and what role can they play? You know, not to suppress this player, but to enable them,
to
do more, right?
Yes.
Definitely, like, even in terms of the labor laws as well, right? You have to look at it very carefully as well, right? Because, you know, sometimes I feel like people forget that we're in South Africa with the highest unemployment rate.
Yes.
You know, so some people, I see them, they get motivated when they see what's happening in the US, and they're like, oh, we're going to take the same thing here, these labor laws. You know, it doesn't, you can't do the same thing in a country which has got the highest unemployment rate. Yet things are slightly different. You want to make sure that, like, for instance, for startups, right, it must be easy for startups to hire people. If they don't perform, it must be easy for them to fire them, you know.
It can't be expensive,
It shouldn't be like, now all of a sudden it's like, oh, you have to think twice about, like, should I hire someone or not, right?
Yes.
But in a country where there's a high unemployment rate, people should be competing.
Yes.
For jobs, you know. That means, like, even in government, you should not be having someone who's giving you attitude, who doesn't want to serve you, all right?
Yeah.
People must compete, because we've got so many of them unemployed.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
So the best people must come and help the economy to drive it forward.
Excellent. You've touched a little bit on this, but could you talk more to the future of e-commerce? You've said data analysis, video content are two things. What else do you see happening in this space?
Yeah, look, I think, let me say, generally AI is just making, is a space where everybody has to be in it, right? So AI, and like I said, like I think a lot of people have been thinking more of robotics and everything, right? But there's a lot of things that are happening in AI, right? So I mean, when I spoke about the video content in terms of like what makes it, TikTok to be, you know, who they are today, right? It's mainly because of having created a platform that is AI driven, right? So how they show you the content, really, really AI, and everything, you know, from the beginning to the end, well driven by AI.
Yes.
We're starting to see a shift as well in terms of how obviously people want to buy things. So I've seen a lot of other platforms in the US in terms of like really showing like recommendations from people that you know, that you trust.
Oh, okay.
So if you think about it, for instance, like one thing that I could touch on is like things like even ratings. If you think about ratings, before ratings, right, there was nothing, right? And then there were ratings, right?
Yes.
And then people really love them, right? But the ratings also got a problem, right? Today, right? In today's world, because now everything has scaled now, right? A lot of people now are online. There's also robots. There's things being done.
So you can push those numbers.
You can push those numbers. Mm-hmm. But when you push those numbers, then it means you then have to look at like how do you actually think about these things of ratings? Still the right solution today, yes. Right? So today, for instance, when I think about ratings, definitely is one thing that also needs to be revamped in terms of, are we still showing things? When we say this TV is 4.5 out of 5, is it true?
Is it a true reflection?
And who rated it as well? It matters, right? Because also that's why, for me, it almost feels like you have to create another way of saying, maybe these people that you know are the ones who rated this thing, right?
Okay, so this is what your friends say.
Yeah. Mm. So there's a lot of that needs to be done in that space. I'm also seeing more of like what do you call this? Like the other part that I wanted to talk about is more like I actually forgot the point I wanted to mention now.
Let's take a break. Yeah, let's take a break. We're about to close anyway, so this will be the last thing, and then and then we're gone.
Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to talk more about beside ratings. Obviously, like the other thing I mentioned is the video. Obviously, the ratings, and obviously the speed as well. Right. So speed is also very critical in today's age. So we're seeing, like, so for instance, what we're seeing now, when I look at the Zuzu platform, there, in fact, a lot of people who actually use our platform are very young people, right? So what we're seeing, definitely from your Gen Z, you know, it's very clear that speed matters to them.
Okay.
So they want things delivered faster,
very quickly,
but without having to pay for it.
And you must solve that problem.
Yeah, so those are problems that, remember, like, if these customers, they're not interested on how you do it.
Yes, just get it done.
Just come up with a solution, get it done, right?
Yes.
So things like that as to, like, how do you bring the prices down, right, for the end customer, but still give them that better experience, right?
Yes.
And then also, like, one of the things that I'm also seeing as well is, like, you know, like, when the service is great and you're getting it quickly, you know, these customers don't mind. Like, you know, like, they can try things. They can try any other brand.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
As long as you can promise me that you can. That's why if you look at the likes of Timo and everyone, people didn't know those people.
Yes.
Right? It's not like your Fushina or everyone.
Yes.
Right? But because of, like, you know, if you can show it to me that you can give me this that I need
then
quickly.
I'll trust you.
I'll trust you. Mm. Right? So that is very important for people to take note of, right? Mm-hmm. So we're living in a world where things are changing rapidly. Mm-hmm. So in fact, in terms of even the supply chains, you have to do things differently, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so for instance, if you think about even your Shein, your Timu, even how they produce the fashion garments, right? They, they produce them on demand based on AI.
Yes.
So they can predict how many of these are we going to need, right?
Yes.
And produce them within a day or two.
Yes.
Right? So if they see that there's a lot more demand, they just go and make it.
Yes.
And then instead of incurring stock that you could end up losing staff,
yes.
you don't have that problem anymore.
Yeah. You
know? So there's definitely a lot. On our side, what we've been doing as well is we've been doing a lot of things like on the prescription staff to say, you know what, when you upload a script, can we read that script, you know, recognize okay. all the characters and really generate an order, right?
Okay.
So even when it's handwritten, right? So
okay.
I can actually generate an order for you. So instead of you having to wait for someone or a pharmacist to capture the script to read it, yeah, so you can literally upload a script and then get your card ready within seconds and you can check out, pay, do everything online, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think I will say those are the main trends that I'm seeing.
Mm.
Yeah, so there's going to be, I think there's going to be a lot of big changes coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if people are ready, right? Because I think if we think about like the past revolution that we've ever had, right? Like the internet one and the cell phone one, I think this one's going to become the biggest. The AI revolution is going to become the biggest of them all.
Yes.
And you can already see as well in terms of like the money that is going to the AI,
Yes.
Big players, everybody's fighting. It's like, it's now like a real fight, you know, in terms of dominance.
Yeah.
And of course, there's also like the question of energy as well, right?
Mm.
Because remember, like also when you use AI, you know, these to train these models as well, they require more.
It's much more energy, computing.
Right. Yeah, more computing. So the question of electricity as well becomes a big one. Right. Mm-hmm. So this one, in fact, is threatening not just here in South Africa only. So, so for instance, if you think about even in the US, they're starting to think about like maybe we could actually do the training for our models in countries like Sydney for Australia, for instance. You know, can we take this and train it there, and then bring it back to the US? You know, where it's trained in a place where there's more electricity, where they're using this solar power panels, plant panels.
Okay.
So this AI actually comes with so many things.
Yes.
Right. But I think like you know you have to be very. You have to be ready for it to say, what are we doing as a country to take advantage of these things? Because remember, like, if we don't, right, we're going to be controlled again, you know,
by
outside players, right? So the same thing that people used to cry about to say, no, people came, they took our land, all of those things, it will happen again, right? Where if people don't participate in this space, we're going to cry again to say, you know what, someone came. They took our land.
Right? Yes, they took our digital land this time.
They took our digital land this time, And you don't want that.
Mm.
And the only way to avoid it is you have to wake up and do things. You have to work, right?
Yes.
You have to think about these problems. You know, I understand that there's other pressing things that you might have, you think you have, but this, you can't miss on this. Mm. You can't miss on this AI revolution. You can't say, we don't even have a minister of AI. Right? We need to have that.
Do something and you might be the minister too, you know? Maybe. Start somewhere.
Yeah, but those things, like, it's things that you can't really... Because also, like, the problem is a lot of people think this thing's going to happen in 80 years, 40 years.
Yes.
You know? But what we're seeing is the AI is moving very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at even open AI, right? Things have just been moving, like, drastic. Like, things are changing, like, so quickly.
Yes.
Customer service as well is getting destroyed as well, right? So... Mm-hmm. The days of, you know, having customer agents sitting at the back, you know, like...
There's a bot to do that now. Yeah.
So you can actually speak to... You can order things and then, you know, like just speaking to an AI agent that can help you to place orders and do everything and do it better, you know. So a lot of those things have been... Remember, like, back then there was a time where there were bots, but they were not well-trained.
Yes.
Right? It was just like... You know, they will just give you garbage. But now, it's like you've got bots that are well-trained that can actually give you the answers that you've been looking for.
Yes.
So that's how scary things are at the moment.
Mm.
But it's not scary. It's actually opportunities that are out there.
Yes.
Right. So as to like companies are ready for this, that's another story.
Yeah. So, that's a very interesting conversation about the future of technology and e-commerce. Donald, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
No, thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That is Donald Valohi, CEO and founder of Zulzi on the Tech Central Show. Thanks for tuning in.